So have you noticed at all in your practice here these days that there can be a time when things are just going along fine, doing themselves, there's awareness, things are coming and going, you know it's happening, no big kerfuffle, and then suddenly something just comes in, the mind collects around it and goes wild? Does that ever happen to anybody? And this sense of it, doesn't have at times a sense of it coming out of nowhere? I mean, it was just fine. Awareness is doing itself. What could possibly, right? It's so obvious when it's like that. I think, how could it ever be different? And then, wham! So, and it's, the Buddha talked about, and gave the example once, that consciousness is like a magic show. He talked about if there was a, back in the early days, if there was a magician, a performing magician at a crossroads, and he's performing, you know, in front of a curtain, and how people would come and be so amazed and thrilled and entranced with all the things that the magician was doing. But then when you get to look behind the curtain and see how the tricks are done, it becomes completely uninteresting. You see how it's done, it all makes sense, but it's just not amazing anymore. So he's kind of using that as a simile for how these storms, this confusion is constructed in our mind. And what we can see through our steady mindfulness and the wisdom is we can see again and again kind of the building blocks, the pieces that come together in the magic show that make us feel crazy, that really are taking us away from the simplicity of how things are. So a little bit, not that I can do the whole thing, but just point to some of the construction pieces tonight. There's Ajahn Buddhadasa, who I think we may have mentioned, who was a great Thai meditation master and monk, forest monk, and quite a scholar as well. And I didn't hear this from him, I read it, but later in his life, he started really liking talking about a particular word concept that's in the suttas, the early discourses, but not used that much. I'm just going to mention it. I'm not going to go on about it. But the word is atamayata, which basically means not constructed of that, not constructed of anything. Basically, he says this is like the ultimate Buddhist concept. The heart mind that's not, I'm going to use different words, not constructing, not fabricating, not concocting, which is a word I'm sure you probably don't know, but I love it in English. It's like you throw a bunch of different things together and you concoct a stew or a photo or, you know, something, but it's kind of like random things thrown together. Not constructing. And what this means, what it's pointing to, is the peace of heart, mind, in a moment when the architects of greed and aversion and confusion aren't grabbing hold to various aspects of experience and constructing it into something that we give a meaning to that it doesn't need to have, and then we suffer. The process of fabricating. The mind, the attention going out, grabbing hold of some experience and creating a whole story, a whole reality around it. Can you relate to that at all? Yeah. And how much of the time that's what's going on. And it's extra. It's extra. Back to, remember, Fred read the Bahia, a little bit of the Bahia Sutta the other night. I'm going to read it again because that's what this is talking about. The heart mind in a moment, consciousness that is not busy fabricating all kinds of explanations and stories and reality and liking and disliking out of simple moment-to-moment experience. Thus, Bahia, you should train yourself. In reference to what is seen, there's only the seen. in reference to the heard, only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed, so physical senses. In reference to the cognized, only the cognized mental experience. Just what occurs is what's occurring. No need to add anything extra. Then, Bahia, there is no you. When there is no you, you are neither here, nor there, nor in between. This, just this, is the end of suffering. And if we try to think about that, that's going in quite the wrong direction. And so I want to try and talk a bit about at least three of what I would call the building blocks that are fabricating so frequently when steady awareness and wisdom aren't recognizing accurately. They're useful tools when we recognize them accurately. And my tendency is I could talk for an hour about each one of these. So I'll feel like I'm just barely mentioning it. I don't just to let you know. But I won't talk an hour about each one of them. Don't worry. So the first one is thought, the process of thinking, just the quality of thought. And, of course, we all recognize that's a big aspect of our experience, one of the six sense doors, hearing, seeing, smelling, thinking. Thoughts arise. And as I'm sure you know, really deeply, Vipassana practice is not about trying to end thought, right? We all know that, right? But it's about, as with everything, to recognize accurately, to understand the nature of thought. As someone said, I don't remember who, thought is a great servant, but a horrible master. Most of the time, we're letting thought run the show through lack of steady attention, awareness, and not really, wisdom just not quite understanding what it is. So I'm just point to it tonight. We'll keep on exploring it as you have been. But, you know, if you just think a thought, just think the clouds are on the mountain. Now, don't look at them. Think the thought. That's what we do immediately. We don't even notice the thought. We do the thing. We're in the world. That's exactly what happens. But just think a thought. Poof. Today is whatever day it is, Tuesday. What is it? If you look with awareness at the thought energy itself, it's just a little poof of energy. Right? It comes from nothing. It goes to nothing. It has the example of being like a rainbow is pretty spot on. Conditions come that it arises and it goes. It's pretty insubstantial even when it's here. So as Dingo Kensi Rinpoche says, you know, when we really notice the quality of thought and see its transparent, ephemeral nature, there's no logical reason, he says, why thought should have so much power to cause us suffering. Of course, logic and Dharma don't really go together that much the way things are, but there is no logical thought, no logical reason that they should give us so much trouble. So this is a large part of the magic show. They come together with the next two pieces. When we're not recognizing a thought as a thought, but even when it comes together with a strong emotion, we tend to not recognize the thought as a thought, as you know, I mean, this isn't anything new, and get completely into what it's saying, what it's doing, or if it comes with a strong emotion, we give it that much more energy. But just because a thought arises frequently, and just because it comes together with a strong emotion, that doesn't make it more true. In fact, it might be just the opposite. It doesn't make it more true. And it's still just this energy of thought. But we do tend to get carried away by the strong emotions, which I'll talk just now about the next two pieces and then come back to this sense of, how we don't see just thought, but practicing that, how it's nothing. No thought is more than that. And how we, in a way, the thoughts building on each other create a seemingly solid reality that we sometimes are completely living in, you know? Really, really not recognizing that it's thought, but taking it for the absolute reality. And even in very simple ways, which I'll give a simple example in a few minutes. Okay, so thought. So the two things that occur that almost every mind moment that give rise to thought and the coming together can take us really far, really fast, are two qualities that arise every moment in the consciousness, every moment of sense contact. Ursula talked about one last night, this Vedana, this feeling tone, how in every moment one of the six sense door experiences is arising. Remember, this is review. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, or thinking, a thought's arising. And in every moment that it's arising and is known in consciousness, it's just naturally felt or experienced. It's a mental experience as having a slightly pleasant or unpleasant or neither pleasant or unpleasant quality. Remember, Ursula talked about that. This is just happening, not good or bad, and it's not personal. And it's not inherent in the object. So if I ring this bell, some people might experience it as slightly pleasant, some as unpleasant, some as neutral. It's not inherent in the object. It's how it's felt in the mind in a moment. And there could be another moment where maybe I hear it as pleasant, but another moment there's different conditions and the experience is unpleasant. So it's something that's arising, that's conditioned, as is everything. So I won't say more because Ursula talked about how that leads into clinging and aversion and all the stories and the suffering. But what comes together, they're really arising at the same time, and it kind of, you could say, quadruples the impact, is this quality that we call perception in English, that the Buddha talked about, sanya in Nepali. Again, arising with every sense contact. And these are things that are just immediately arising. And they're saying in the suttas, you can't really say one is first, that perception comes before feeling tone or vice versa. Sometimes one or the other might be more observable to our mindfulness attention. And so perception being, as I'm probably most of you are aware, it's this basic sense of recognition of what the sense contact is. So if there's a sound, the recognition, and it's often as a word, you know, or image or thought would be bird call. So that's just normal. That's not like a problem. It's not like we're trying to get rid of perception. But we recognize, oh, bird call. But perception, as the Buddha described it, is based in memory. If I never heard a bird call, I wouldn't know what that was. So it's based in memory, and it's based in all our personal experiences. So perception, of course, is essential. I mean, we wouldn't, you know, be able to tell the door from the wall without perception. It could be messy trying to leave the room, you know. So perception is very useful. But it's not 100% always true, and that's where we can get confused. It's interesting, perception, because just one perception, you can feel how at times immediately your whole sense of self in the world can arise around it. When you hear the bell earlier, you may not think it, the perception is bell, but there's the whole sense of the time of day, where you are, what's supposed to happen now, what you're supposed to do, you know, that's just all there, kind of married into the perception. Nothing wrong with that, but just noticing, because we don't tend to notice, we just take it, that's true, that's how it is. That's what's happening. We don't see it as a combination of perception and memory and thought. I remember one time, I noticed how one perception can cause the whole world of me and my past to arise. I was at a Spirit Rock teaching, and I was down in there's a staff room with a lot of books, and I was looking for some quotation I wanted to use in a talk, and I found this book, and I was just flipping through it, and I came on a note that someone had left there another year, and I picked it up and looked at it, and I thought, oh, it was my handwriting. It had no name on it. I was like, oh, immediately, wow, that's my handwriting. And it happened to be obviously the quote I was looking for because I liked it. But anyway, as soon as I saw it, it was this visceral sense of me, you know? Carol, my whole life, my handwriting, and the whole sense of me in the past. And it was really interesting just to see how that all comes in one moment of seeing. It was seeing that was occurring. And the recognition, the perception of the seeing was my handwriting. That's all that was happening. And all the rest of it is like memory, thoughts, feelings that come. So really interesting. This is going on moment to moment to moment. Recognizing it, it's not a problem when we recognize what's happening. As I'm sure you've heard, we've talked often and you're aware, perception is not a steady state, absolute thing. The way I perceive an experience may not be the way someone else perceives it, especially since it comes from culture and conditioning. This is a lot of where the different conditioning of different cultures really bangs into each other. Because what seems like a polite way to be in one culture may be perceived as really impolite or rude or aggressive in another culture. And, you know, when we don't have a familiarity with the other culture, the first time I ever traveled, you know, I would experience the way other cultures were acting as weird or aggressive or disrespectful or whatever, if you don't recognize. In Thailand, in Burma, it's considered extremely disrespectful to point the bottoms of your feet at a teacher or at a Buddha statue. Now, Americans who go there have no sense of that. So it's really quite common to lounge around with your feet sticking out at the teacher and the Buddha statue. And that's felt as really disrespectful, you know, especially when first. But now that there's more cross-cultural information, you know, the teacher, they'll just go, ah, you know, Americans, they're just uncouth barbarians, right? And then, you know, we do the reverse with other cultures. So there's a sense of, okay, we can put up with it, but really my perception's the accurate perception. So it's just how it is. And then that's coming together with pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. So put a perception together with pleasant and not recognizing either one, very likely there's going to be some clinging or aversion. But when the perception's inaccurate and we actually see through it, all the castle of thought that's built around it can just deflate right away. That's nice because then we get to see, oh, look how that was built up. That was concocted and just falls away. It's usually simple ones, but those are fun to watch on retreat. A simple one. I was in retreat in a monastery in Burma a few years ago, and at this place, there's lots of areas to walk, and I was walking. There's a pathway, and then there's a Bodhi tree that's planted in kind of a big circular concrete well, you could say. You know, Bodhi tree like the one that the Buddha was supposedly sitting under when he was awakened. So people would go and kind of like to walk around the tree, just walking in. So one day I was walking up that way, just to walk up that way, and there was a Burmese nun. I don't think it was one I knew, but I know a lot of Burmese nuns. And so my perception that went into it is that many of the nuns I know, they have a very strong practice of reflecting on the qualities of the Buddha. And this is both a concentration practice, but it really brings incredible faith. It really lights them up, and it's a kind of a practice that, for me, it doesn't speak to me. But when I see I'm around when nuns have been practicing it, the amount of faith and how that manifests in the way they live their lives, that's very inspiring. So I had that. That's kind of like my memory, my conditioning around it. So she's walking around and with her hands in Anjali, walking around, and so it was a seeing and pleasant. I wasn't saying seeing and pleasant. I just saw, oh, this is what's happening. She's walking around with her hands in Anjali, the whole sense of, you know, the faith of the nuns. It's really so lovely. The nuns have so much faith. They're so simple, even just a tree, blah, 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 blah. And I got up there, and she was actually texting on her handy. It's just really what goes on. They all have handies now. That's how it is. So at that time, I could just laugh, right? There could be another time if I had really been attached to, oh, they're so, you know, pure and blah, 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 I would have felt really, you know, punctured, or, oh, no, my view of how they're supposed to be, and she's not, but that wasn't the case in that case. It was just like, ah, ha, ha, you know, so much for that. But this is really how our perceptions can be completely wrong. And if we don't get that information, this is where now perception and vedana coming together, not quite recognized, coming together with thought, gets us into a big mess, which the Buddha, which is called proliferation or papancha. I'm sure it's proliferation of thought. So the definition in one of the discourses is what one feels, vedana, what one feels, one perceives. So whatever sense door is felt is perceived. What one perceives, one thinks about. What one thinks about, one complicates. One complicates with associations, with ideas, with memories. And then these ideas, these notions, these memories, they then attack and overwhelm a person. Do you get a sense of that? It's like the image that's often given of the monk who painted a picture of a tiger on the cave wall and then stood back and looked at it, and it was so lifelike that he screamed and ran out of the cave. That's what papancha is. And sometimes it's just yada, yada, yada. But when it's really connected with wanting or aversion and strong perception, it can cause us quite some discomfort. Confusion. And this is really, I'll give you a simple example of papancha because it doesn't go too far, but you already know, right, how far and fast it can go. But just the sense of another friend, he was sitting, again, it was in a retreat center in Burma, and he was sitting in the hall, big hall, and just sitting, then he heard a man snoring really loudly behind him. So hearing, and immediately, it was clearly unpleasant, strong aversion came up. So the perception of snoring, the vedana of unpleasant, and immediately the thought, doesn't he have any, you know, if he's sleepy, he should stand up. Doesn't he have any sense of how important it is what we're doing, and other people are here, and how much noise, you know, just on and on and on. And then he said, okay, let me just refocus on the sound. So he refocused on the sound, and then the perception shifted that, oh, it's workmen sawing outside, doing construction work outside. He said, oh, it's so hot out. Those poor guys having to work in the boiling sun. And then he felt all this compassion, you know, and again, that's also papancha, you know, oh, these poor guys. And then he'd say, okay, he'd recognize, he'd come back, and then the sound would come in, and then it'd go, no, it is snoring. It is snoring. And he said he just kind of went back and forth between those two things. And he wouldn't let himself look around to see if the guy was really snoring at this point, because it was just getting really interesting to see. This is exactly the construction, this simple architect of construction. And in a way like this, it's fun to observe. But even so, when there was the annoyance at the snoring, it wasn't pretend annoyance. You really felt it. And then when it was sawing, the annoyance was completely gone. It was real compassion. So the perception and the vedana and the story the mind takes, it completely leads to emotions and reactions and thoughts, and it's a whole world. We're not saying it's pretend. We're feeling those emotions, and they're feeding more actions. And then he kind of gets the whole thing is being constructed in a moment from the simple, you know, building blocks of moment-to-moment experience. In the big picture then, for my friend, it didn't matter if it was snoring or sawing. It didn't matter. It was hearing, perception, awareness could just be with the whole thing. It didn't have to be any kind of a problem. This is the nature, the power of steady awareness. And the nature of insight is really sort of like when I saw the nun was really on her handy, the accurate recognition of what's happening, and all the stories just fall away because they don't make any sense. But with the real insight, you don't have to make up another story. So my friend with the two different sounds, neither of those was exactly insight. It was two different stories. The insight was, oh, actually, I have no idea what perception doesn't know. And more often than not, there is ignorance. We don't know. What's scary is how quick the mind makes something up that it is when we don't know. So this is, it's really fascinating. This is all happening so quickly, you know, in one instant, in one mind moment, you know, the sense experience, the perception, the Vedana, the consciousness of it, and then boom, some thoughts. Of course, most of the time, we're not going to be able to see that whole process. On retreats, when things are slowed down and more simple, we can get more of a sense of it, and it can help us. But there's so much in an instant, it puts me into deep amazement and respect that how could the Buddha see all of this stuff and figure it out, you know, and that when I keep looking in my experience and the mind is clear and steady enough, it so far it really holds up. It really seems to be true. And how just moment to moment, it's just the six sense experiences and these other mental factors arising, and it doesn't have to be so complicated, but how it can be. So, okay, now give just a simple example. Didn't get complicated, but how even when it's just simple and not a lot of reactivity, I noticed this in my mind today. I don't know if this will even make sense to you all, but I got fascinated by it, so you have to hear it. How just a simple thought is taken for reality when not recognized as thought. Just so simple things. So in the sitting this morning, when we were sitting here, and I heard a helicopter fly by. You probably don't remember. I heard the helicopter fly by. So just pretty present, and I thought, okay, helicopter flying by. That's what's happening. And there wasn't a big reaction. It must have been kind of neutral. I wasn't aware. But then I just got in because it kept happening. So I was just getting, I got really, what's occurring right now kind of brought into mind more specifically. And I saw that the thought, helicopter flying by, that there was the sound and there was a quick mental image, which is a thought, visuals are also thought, of, you know, the view out there and the helicopter flying by, which my eyes weren't open, but that was the thought. And with that also an image, a sense of me sitting here in the room. Right? So it really, but without careful looking at it, that was, this is what's happening. This room is here. We're all sitting here. That's out there. There's a helicopter flying by. All of that is really the reality of what is happening. But really, really, all the awareness can know was hearing, thinking. The visual of the out there, that's a thought arising now. The image, the felt sense of me sitting in the room, that's a thought arising now. That's what was happening. The perception of helicopter just arising now. But I saw how with the thought, the image of out there and in here, that seemed really like that's the real, yeah, that's what's happening, right? Not even recognizing that those were both thoughts. So I don't know if that makes sense. But to me, it's like, yeah, it's just hearing, thinking, perception. Bahia, in this heard, there's just what's heard. In the seen, the thought, there's just what's thought, not adding anything extra. And you're thinking, how can we live like that? That's impossible. It was true. The helicopter was flying by and the vision's out there and we're all sitting in the room, right? Which isn't like saying if it's true or not true. That's kind of, the Buddha was always, there's many different examples when people would talk, want to discuss with him the views of does everything exist or does nothing exist? And he would say, it's neither nor, that's the wrong question, you know. So here, if we get all lost, is it true or isn't it? It's the wrong question. It's really bringing in an awareness to what's actually awareness can recognize right now. Hearing, thinking, seeing, perception. That's what's happening. So when we add more to that, it's so simple we can't stand it, you know. But that's really a way, as in formal practice, when you don't have to do a lot, you can start to get the sense of that. And when there's times where understanding is the thought, then we can use thoughts. You know, we're not saying thoughts have no reality or no they don't relate to anything. We can certainly use thoughts. But when we know it's a thought, and then we can use it, it's very different from completely mistaking the thought and the wanting or the aversion for the absolute reality, thinking our perception is just how it is. So the steady moment-to-moment mindfulness is really an invitation, an opportunity to explore this stuff, to really see how does it work. So thoughts, papancha, how this really strengthens, they say there's perception, and then with the papancha we think about what we perceive and feel, and when it hardens into a view, it's just we're thinking about it, we say, oh, this is how it is. The Buddha talks about that as a view. Ursula spoke about views last night, the sense of this is, it's not always so clear, this is how it is, this is true, and everything else is false. It doesn't usually announce itself so clearly. But the view, the sense of the description, or the sense of an ideology, or whatever, and when the thinking about the perception really strengthens into a view, that's what a view is, a sense of this is how it is. And as Ursula spoke about, the Buddha mentions of the different fields of grasping, the different areas of experience that the tendency to hold on, to crave and grasp is really strong. He listed views specifically as one of the fields of attachment. So, as Ursula said, when we're attached to any idea of how things are or how things should be, it leads us into conflict, right, with ourselves, with others. I mean, it's obvious, but that's the whole realm of politics, the whole realm of organized religion, the whole realm of manners, the whole realm of all kinds of stuff, you know. A lot of the ideas we have about ourselves are views based on particular perceptions and pleasant or unpleasant, and the ideas, the thinking about it, and then, oh yeah, that's what's really true about me. I'm hopeless. And that's the view that then gives rise to conflicts with anything else that might give you different information. So, example, go back to when I was seeing that nun walking around. So say it had been different, say I had a different conditioning, and I was walking and I see this nun walking around, very reverential, and I have a conditioning that's actually not spiritual or not appreciating that kind of faith and thinking it's kind of blind and stupid. So it could easily be that I would see that whole thing and get really quite negative about it. Something so simple as just seeing, but it's going against the view I have. It feeds into the view of that's really wrong, that's really ignorant behavior, that's really going to cause suffering in the world, and look at what the Buddhists are doing, and on and on and on, just from a simple seeing, when there's attachment to a view, right? And just get a sense of that. So simple, simple experience gets so complicated through papancha, and the papancha leading to attachment to a view. So much power is given to the thoughts and the views that they form that with steady sati we can really start to see through them. There was something I wanted to read here. But now I'm not sure what it is. Oh, this is where I wanted to say, even when there's strong views, and maybe someone is acting in a way that is, maybe it does really seem harmful, but the views that we're attached to and the perception can bring up really strong emotions together with the thought. This is where, when we're really attached and I know that this is how things are, and it comes together with strong emotion, that the thoughts really take on a power where it's really hard for us to even bring awareness that this is still just a thought. I mean, it's possible. Often now in my life when I start to get all caught up in something, and you can feel you're caught up, right? Can't you, when you're not caught, and then something comes in, even if you think, I should be able to see my way through this with awareness, but you can't. But you can feel the difference between being all identified now and before you weren't. You know what I mean? So now in life I can see that, and sometimes I'll try and talk myself out of it, but then that doesn't ever work. But this is a thought. And it can be like the thought is bringing up fear or anger or whatever, but I can, this is a thought. And you can really bring in awareness and see it's a thought. It's bringing us back to the level of actuality. This really can help cut through. So this is from Dingo Kensi Rinpoche. I like it very much. He's talking about that. Because the biggest view we have is the view of sense of self. That's where we're going next. He said that yet the sense of I, is just a thought. Thoughts and feelings have no intrinsic solidity, form, shape, or color. When a thought of anger arises in the mind with such force that you feel aggressive and destructive, is that thought of anger actually holding a weapon? Is it at the head of an army? Can it burn things like fire, crush them, or carry them away like a violent river? No. Anger, like any other thought or feeling, has no real self-existence, not even a definite location in your body, speech, or mind. It is like wind roaring in empty space. I love that. This is when there's awareness, that we're really seeing, that there's enough awareness to see that anger is a thought and a feeling, like wind roaring in empty space. Instead of allowing wild thoughts to enslave you, we can realize their essential emptiness. Of course, we can't do that every moment. Of course not. But that's the direction. That's a possibility. And it is possible because it's true. Not because it's a nice idea, but because it's true. And there's moments that when the steady awareness is enough and has enough balance in it, that the anger, for example, isn't so strong. It's strong. It's on the edge of overwhelm. But you're not quite overwhelmed. You can still take refuge in awareness. Just give yourself some chance to explore. It's a quality of thought. Is this really a thought? Is that true? I mean, don't believe me. It doesn't help. But is that true? A thought is a thought. It can really change. And it's kind of also to remember to incline the heart and mind towards that possibility of the peace of the heart-mind that isn't involved in fabricating and reacting and constructing all the time. That this is, as I would say, the more natural quality of mind from Ajahn Chah. You've probably heard this, pretty well known. About this mind, there's nothing really wrong with it. It is intrinsically pure. Within itself, it is already peaceful. That the mind is not peaceful these days is because it follows moods. The real mind is simply an aspect of nature. Sense impressions come, just as we've been saying, and trick it into happiness, suffering, gladness, and sorrow. But the mind's true nature is none of those things. That gladness or sadness is not the mind, but only a mood coming to deceive us, to trick us. The untrained mind gets lost and follows these things. It forgets itself. Then we think it is we who are upset or at ease or whatever. But really this mind of ours is already unmoving and peaceful, just like a leaf which is still as long as no wind blows. If a wind comes up, the leaf flutters. The fluttering is due to the wind. The fluttering is due to those sense impressions. The mind follows them. If it doesn't follow them, it doesn't flutter. You know, flutter, shake. Yeah. If we know fully the true nature of sense impressions, our mind, heart will be unmoved. That's really what we're talking about, the quality of mind that's at peace, at rest. Not the silence of nothing happening, but the peace, the silence of the heart mind that just recognizes things as they are and doesn't need to construct a whole story that pretty inevitably leads to our confusion and suffering. So when, back to views, one very interesting thing you might notice when there's a view going on, a strong view, say a strong political view is a good one, that our perception tends to be distorted or colored by the strength of the clinging, the attachment to the view, to the explanation, to the point that there's often what I call selective perception, that we actually don't consciously perceive sense impressions that are opposed to the particular belief or view. So I'll give you a simple example. A retreat I was teaching many years ago, it was about 50 people. We were about 4 days into the retreat, and I was sitting like now. But it was years ago, so more people were sitting cross-legged than do now, which is an age thing, mostly. But back then, most people were sitting cross-legged, a few in chairs and I in a chair. And a woman, I don't remember if it was her first retreat or not, about the fourth day, she came and was having we were having a practice discussion, and she said, you know, I'm just in so much agony, sitting this cross-legged, I just can't do it, and my knees, and it's horrible, on and on and on. And I said, well, why don't you sit in a chair? She said, I can't sit in a chair. You can't do it. You can't meditate sitting in a chair. Clearly, we have this cross-legged. You can't meditate sitting in a chair. I said, well, I'm sitting in a chair. And then, like, her whole face went, you are? I mean, completely. Completely. It wasn't that she thought I was just, you know, not the real stuff. She literally didn't see that I was sitting in a chair. That's the power of selective perception. It's scary because we don't know when that's going on, right? You know, I mean, you can see with the political views, I mean, the states is so divided now. But one side, you know, I think I mentioned the other, you just don't want to let in. You can't let in what views the other side is holding. It's just like, so it's like this. This is true and that's false. This is true and that's false. And so it's really amazing how that happens. And then we act from it. Now, another story. Years ago, at the meditation center in IMS, the cooks, you know, there's like four or five cooks. And at the time, it's a little more formalized now, a little more organized. But at the time, the cooks really could pretty much decide what they wanted to make. I mean, vegetarian all and within the budget. But they could decide what they wanted to make. They didn't have set menus or anything. So we went through various times. There was the seaweed time. Well, we won't go into that one. At this particular time, they had the belief, the view, that many of you may agree with, that sugar is really bad for you. And no one should eat sugar. And we're not going to serve sugar. So they had the power, right? There was no sugar. So that's the view leading to action. And you can find a million people to agree with it and a million people not to. But the point is, we were having, at that time, once a year we would have, we'd call a retreat for late teenagers, not even young adult, but late teenagers. And at this time they would bring a lot of them in from the city, like the inner city in New York, New Haven, and bus them up there. So these kids, they're not used to vegetarian food. They're not used to tofu and chickpeas. You know, they're living on fast food and hot dogs and potato chips and stuff. And they come in, it's not only that, but they can't have sugar. You know, you can't have sugar. I mean, you know, they're probably in the park next door, they're selling cocaine, and these kids can't have sugar. And finally, the teacher really intervened and had to go talk to the cooks. So just some of the kids that really needed sugar, they gave them a secret stash that they had to, like, go hide their stash of sugar. You know, like, just put it out. And it's like, you know, we get whacked out. Yeah. So attachment to views, and we feel like, no, this is just how it is, how it is. So the biggest view that we get attached to that we don't even recognize a lot, as the Buddha talked about, the Pali word, the word for view is ditti, it just means view. And the Pali word is sakaya ditti, which is often translated as identity view or personality view. And so it's one of the three characteristics of experience, which Fred will talk about tomorrow night. But the really misperception of any particular experience, any of the six sense experiences that keep happening, as being me or mine. And that, when that perception, it's a perception that arises, you know, this is my body. This feeling of sadness is me. We don't think of that. That's just how it feels. Then there's that perception, and then you have the pleasant or the unpleasant and the papancha that comes about it. And the whole creation, in that moment there's a felt sense of me, but then the whole creation through thought of me, of the view of me. Have you noticed that at all happening in the death? So it's really, and this is, we're coming back to thought again, how thought can be spinning this, creating the story of me over and over and over. And we may sometimes know it's thought. Sometimes we can see it's just thought. Other times we know it's thought, but still there's the believing of the thought describing the perception. So, and we may not notice that the perception that's being seen as me is changing all the time. It's different things. And the resultant papancha, the thoughts, the stories, they're also changing. You may not think so, but have a look. Because then the feeling, the assumption that it's me, it's steady, that's the assumption, the not seeing the changing nature. So this is a simple example I would give, just obvious. If, say you're walking. It's one of those times when everything's just flowing, you know. So there's seeing, there's hearing, things are happening, awareness is there, it's all mellow, and a thought arises, wow, I've really got it down now. Little thought. And it may come and go, but say it comes as a sense of me. We don't think that's my thought, you know, but the thought comes and is perceived as me or mine. And it's pleasant, right? Oh, yeah, it's going good now. And then not quite mindful of it, not quite awareness, and it just leads to the next, you know. It's going so well. Awareness is really like the key to life, isn't it? And I understand it now. And now, you know, we start telling Dharma talks in our head. We're going to Tibet in a cave for 3 years, whatever your particular predilection is. Or you're giving, you know, Dharma lectures to thousands of people. Or you're just going home and your friends are going, wow, what happened to you? Right? I mean, we've all been there. We've all been. This is like in the blink of an eye. And this is, we don't recognize that this is a whole construction of me. And in that moment, whatever memories come up and are perceived are going to be the good ones. I always had this spiritual bent. I remember in third grade, blah, 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 you know. And then it's going, and then at some point you stumble and you go over something. And you go, oh, I wasn't being very mindful, I guess. I wasn't being mindful. Oh, my God. It's hopeless. Look at what an egocentric fool I am. And then it just starts going, you know. The unpleasant perception of I'm not, and all the thoughts, everything back from second grade, every bad thing you did that shows your inherent evil nature. And even this, even the Dharma, you pervert it. You turn it against what's real, you know. And if you asked, you just think all of that was me, right? We wouldn't say it's completely different sense of me arising and passing, arising and passing. The story, the Sakaya Ditti, the personality view of I'm the great Dhamma person, that died when you stumbled. And then the sense of you're, you know, the worthless worm on the face of the earth, well, that dies when you hear the bell for lunch and you just start going to go eat, you know. And then that whole thing's gone, you know. And to just see this, it helps that it's funny because it isn't personal. None of it's personal. It's just this is vipaccha attached to view and this sense of self happening over and over. When we start to trust, take refuge in the awareness more than the story, it's almost like some people have said, you can kind of just settle back and watch the movie. And I've told this before in many talks, it really is like that. One long 3-month retreat, I had just watched a particular movie before I went. Maybe you found out you shouldn't watch things or listen to music before you come on retreat unless you want to live with it for a while. So I was like, this movie kept replaying and replaying and replaying. But then at some point I realized, oh, sometimes it was the Carol movie and sometimes it was Harrison Ford movie. And ultimately, it was the same. I mean, the stories were different. But what was happening was just thought and perception and feeling. It really, I'm not saying it was sort of the same. It was the same. It's exactly the same process. One wasn't really more real than the other. All those stories I just told, none of that's real. It's just thoughts being driven by papancha. Nisargadatta Maharaj said, the world, I must say also the sense of self, is so real because you think about it all the time. Stop thinking and it will dissolve into thin mist. That's all that's happening with six sense experiences. But maybe you're thinking, I don't want it to dissolve into thin mist. Well, if you don't want it to, it won't. And as long as we don't want it to, it won't. We can have our sense of self and our papancha as long as we want to hang on to it. So don't worry about that. But Lily Tomlin, she said, I just like this, I always wanted to be somebody, but I should have been more specific. But we can also, the steadiness of awareness, why it's so important that steady awareness doesn't just pick and choose what you think is worth paying attention to. That's exactly how the stories and the misperceptions keep going. Because what's deciding what's worth paying attention to? Some view in the back we don't even know. That's why there's so much emphasis on the steadiness, the continuity. Not that you can make it be continuous, but the willingness to remember, to take refuge in just remembering awareness, whether you're sitting on the toilet or doing your work job or sitting in the hall or walking, one isn't more important than the other. Because it's in the steadiness, then you can't help but start to notice that there's many moments when the papancha isn't going on, when this telling the story of me and other is not happening. It really is just the simplicity of whatever's arising in this moment. Just sitting and coolness and hearing. You don't have to be saying all of that. But when there's just this presence, this interest, this willingness to just be with what is, it really is like the Bahia Sutta. In the seen, there's just what's seen. In the heard, there's just what's heard. The sensed, in the cognized, there's just that. When there's just totality of presence, there is no sense of me or you. And you're neither here nor there nor in between. And there isn't a here nor there or in between. It's just this. And we just, it doesn't mean the world's a blank, boring nothing. You know, it's not that at all. But when we're not, we start to get just not so entranced by all the reactions of the mind and the papancha and the self stories, and just see it, let it come, let it go. And it's not a dull, boring nothing. It's really the sense of the natural peace and ease, as Ajahn Amaro says, that is the natural peace and ease of mind and body. That sense of, yes, it's just this, and that's all, and all that's needed. As Mingyur Rinpoche says, a sense of peace that arises from the stability of awareness, which is not dependent on the absence or the presence of pleasant or unpleasant. Sense of peace that arises from the stability of awareness. I just end with two quotations that we don't have to add to it. First from Upasaka Ki, who is a Thai laywoman, who there's a really lovely book of her teachings called Pure and Simple in English, translated by Thanissaro Bhikkhu. So just this one line. What is, is. What is not. No need to add anything extra. That's it. That's it. And the last, what is. What is not, no need to add anything extra. And the last, I'll read this famous pointing out instruction from Patrul, who was a very famous and wise Tibetan wandering vagabond renunciate living in the 1800s. He's really famous for his great wisdom and his just kind of rough vagabond nature. So this is this famous pointing out instruction. I'll leave you with this. Don't think about the past. Don't anticipate. Don't look forward to the future. And don't think about the present. Not messing with it. Leave the mind just as it is. This very instant, aware, relaxed, beyond this, there's not a damn thing. That's it. It's called "It's Not a Damn Thing," pointing out instruction. So let's just sit quietly for a moment.